The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, welcome to this interview episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box. Today I have Frank Gogol, who's in charge of Source Point Press and whose newest book, Dead End Kids, I just had the pleasure of reading this morning, as well as his, I want to say graphic novel, but maybe like collection of shorts, which is called Grief. It was strangely positive and uplifting to read first thing in the morning when it's called Grief. So that was pretty fun. But anyway, how are you this morning, Frank?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Like I said, just before we started recording, I'm a little tired, but I'm here. I'm ready.
Nice. As long as you're ready, then we're ready. So the first question I kind of have is, how did you first get interested in like comic book creation, or like, you know, as a comic book writer and that process?
This is something I get asked all the time, and I haven't actually come up with a good answer. So I'm sorry if I disappoint you in advance, but it's a lot of different touchstones throughout my life. And it's sort of really two questions, right? It's how did I get into comics, and how did I decide I wanted to write them? So the answer to the first question is two things in the 90s. The first was the Spider-Man animated series. I think that anyone who was between, I don't know, 5 and 10 in 1994, 95 was probably watching that if they had any brains. I got into Spider-Man, and then that sort of led to the X-Men and to a bunch of other stuff. And I didn't really buy my first comic until 1997. It was Spider-Boy number one. It was the DC Marvel Amalgam Universe line of books. So it was like Superboy crosses Spider-Man, and it was a terrible comic too. I didn't end up buying another comic until 2006. So I sort of got into comics through other pop culture, and then in 2006, Marvel was doing Civil War, and I saw the image for, I think it was Spider-Man 528 when he first dons the red and gold suit, and I thought that cover was so cool that it was worth me taking the leap and checking out another comic again. The other question, how did I sort of get into writing comics, is sort of the same sort of long trail. I always liked reading and novels, and I studied English in college and graphic design, and sort of without even recognizing it at the beginning of high school, started priming myself for a creative writing sort of career. And then I got into comics in my senior year in 2006. And I was like, I would really like to start writing these. So I just sort of geared my college education towards like what I thought might make me a better comic writer, creative writing classes. I got two master's degrees in creative writing. Like I said, I took some graphic design classes and learned how to lay out pages. And then I did my school newspapers. I thought that might help for some reason. So it was just a long road. And then I graduated with my second master's in 2011. And for 4 years, I didn't do anything. And then it was getting to be the end of 2015. And I was like, damn, I really either got to do something with this or stop talking about it. So at that point, I sat down with my then girlfriend, now fiance, and said, I really don't like my job. I'd rather work from home, freelance, maybe make a little less money, but also have time to look into writing classes and putting some tracks down and getting some scripts done and talking to some artists and doing some networking. And I thought that was going to be like a really long, hard conversation. And she stopped me halfway through and she said, if you want to do it, do it. So I did it. So I quit my job in 2015, and I started taking classes with Comics Experience. Comics Experience is an online sort of all-in-one creators workshop for comics. There's classes and forums and mentorship for sort of all the levels of comics writing and art and inking, lettering, production, comic book law. So it's this really sort of robust comics education bundle, I guess. So I took a class there with Andy Schmidt, who is the founder of Comics Experience, and he's also a former Marvel editor, whose credit includes the Guardians of the Galaxy run that sort of defines the new Guardians of the Galaxy that we have for the movies, and he just worked on Civil War and Winter Soldier a bunch. A lot of the stuff is getting developed into movies the last like 5 or 6 years are things that he worked on about 15 years ago. So this is a smart guy who knows his stuff. So I took the class with him, and that was in February of 2016. I walked away from that class with a 5-page script for like a short story. It's actually the last story in Grief. It's called Embrace. It's one about the father and his son. And I had that script, and like the next day I got in touch with an artist, and like maybe 2 weeks later I had the finished, you know, 5-page story lettered, ready to go to print or to put online or whatever. And I was sort of like almost like bad analogy, but it was like crack. Like I got addicted. I needed to do another one. So I did another one and another one and another one. I ended up with like 10, and that's where Grief came from. There's a little more planning in between, but that's the sort of short version of where Grief came from. I think that answered your question.
It does, very much so. So the interesting thing about Grief is it comes from a very personal place that you talk about in the afterword of the book. And you talk about how the process of making the book was like kind of, you know, almost like addictive, where you're like, okay, I've got this one under my belt. I want to just keep making these. Like, what drove you to like make such personal like pieces within like the scope of this book, as well as, you know, was it just the excitement of making it, or was there something more behind like how deep you were diving into yourself to make these?
You know, it's probably a little bit of all the things you kind of just mentioned. For one, like when I started writing, let me back up a second. When I read comics, like the comics that speak to me most are the ones that have a good story for the character, more so than a good plot. Like I think having both is great, but having like a good character arc with like a character realizing something about themselves and making an honest change or maybe becoming worse. But like for me, that's the thing about stories that gets me jazzed. So when I started writing, I set myself like some sort of like North Star statements that I would like write on a paper and like put on the wall. So I would always be looking at them to make sure I sort of stay true to what I wanted to do. And one of those sort of edicts I set down for myself was that I wanted to write character stories first. So I started out writing, like I said, I wrote Embrace first, which for the listeners, is a 5-page short story about a father and his autistic son and just like a crappy day in their lives. The dad's trying to teach his son how to tie shoes, and the son's really struggling with it, and the son gets frustrated, and they sort of have to learn to navigate life with one another. And like, that's a pretty good example of like the kinds of stories that I wanted to focus on telling, because I think that it's important to focus on the characters, and then sort of wrap a genre around that or a really interesting set of circumstances around that, like some of the other stories. But it always starts with character. So when you're writing stuff like that, and you sort of invariably and unavoidably pull things from your own life. There's another, the first story in the collection is about a homeless woman and two cops sort of trying to defuse a bad situation, which is having an episode. And that came straight from my life. I was, I live in San Francisco now, but a few years ago I was visiting before I moved here, and I saw almost the exact same scenario play out in real life when I was going to get coffee one morning. There's obviously not the aliens aspect of the story in real life,
you
but
see, yeah. Actual aliens.
I mean, if you read the story, only the woman can, or maybe cannot, see the aliens. You know, that's sort of what I was hoping would be the effect, but I didn't see any aliens. I didn't do a Grant Morrison.
Nice.
But so like that's sort of where I draw my stories from. And now that I'm a few years down the line and have gotten comfortable telling character stories sort of by like nature without having to think so much about it and look at a little post-it note on the wall reminding me that that's what I'm trying to do, I can dip into other genres a little more easily and experiment a little more. So that's sort of the first half. And the second half is, you know, when you're telling stories like that, you can't help but draw from your own life, even if you don't realize you're doing it at the time. But I was pretty conscious, because some of the stories in the book are a little bit on the autobiographical side. Everything in there is fictional, but there are some that, you know, you replace like a name and a date and like a time of year and like some character hair colors, and it could be something that was pulled right out of my life. And I think that I realized I was doing that very early on, and I had to sort of be like, well, if this is where the stories are coming from, like I can't turn that valve off and leave myself with nothing to write about. So I was okay with it. I'm also a pretty open person. Like I've had a trying life, in a lot of ways up until my adulthood, and I had a long time to sort of process that and come to terms with it, and also like share it with other people. I try to be like a reasonable person and always say like, you know, no matter how bad I had it or have it, somebody else has got it worse, or their circumstances are more trying than mine. And I try to keep things in perspective. And I think talking about what I've gone through, either with people or in stories, helps other people sort of get that perspective, or to realize that they're not alone. And these are the kinds of things I was sort of reaching for when I wrote Grief. I wanted people to not, you know, like feel like they A, can't talk about these things, B, that they're not happening to other people, and C, that like it will get better. I realized I was doing it early on, and I sort of took the ball and I ran with it, to sort of use the sports metaphor. I think I had written 4 or 5 of the stories in the collection. And this was before I realized it was a collection. These were just samples I was doing in practice, honestly. But I printed them all out and I laid them on my office floor and looked at them. I was sort of trying to get a sense of what I had done already and like what I could try and do next. I was starting to dabble with some genre stuff. And I laid out those 5 and I was like, oh, these sort of fall into the 5 stages of the grieving process kind of loosely. So that's when I sort of made the decision to run with that. And I did 2 stories for each of the 5 stages, and some of them are looser than others, but that's the sort of general premise of like how I came up with the stories. I think that answered the question. I tend to ramble.
No, it's okay. I like listening to people talk about like their process and like, you know, kind of where they, how they got to their conclusion. So, mm-hmm. you know, you talk about them all being a collection kind of based around the idea of the stages of grieving, but it also seems like grief has its own world with like, you know, heroes and mutants and like aliens and things like that. It was that like intentional that you were kind of doing a little bit of world building, or is that just kind of how they ended up? And if it is a little bit of world building, is it a world that you would want to explore a little bit deeper than just shorts?
Sure. Well, the iteration of Grief that ended up being the final one and the one that went to print isn't sort of the original vision I had for it. The original vision I had for it was that all the stories would be sort of fantastical in one way or another, whether sci-fi or monsters or aliens, and that they would have sort of a framing story. And inside of that framing story, you'd have it on the front of the book, and then you'd have like a follow-up at the end of the book. And at the end of the book, say the characters from the various story, and I never really figured out how to do this, but would have come together in some way. Either on one idea I had was like they'd come together as like some kind of like ragtag version of the Avengers, and that would lead into like a second book. Another idea was that they'd all sort of be in like a joint therapy session, which we've seen done a bunch of times and across different comics and movies, but I couldn't really wrap that up the right way I wanted to. And I'm a big fan, and I try really hard to, if I have a cool idea or something I want to do and it's not working, I kill it and don't try to force it, because I think that's where a lot of people who create comics and movies have like a really cool idea, but can't figure out the execution. And that just leads to a sort of just okay version of the idea. And I don't ever want to be doing that, or at least not like consciously. So that's sort of like how we came to grief. Like I just said, you know, it's not working. So let me just tell these 10 stories and I'll find another way to sort of link them all together. And what I came up with, and I think it's a little bit unique, is I don't know if you notice when you're reading through the chapter pages are sort of their own little story. Like it's each one's a little bit different than the last, and it's, you know, it's a dove caught in barbed wire, and every time you had a new chapter page, it's either struggling a little more or starting to get free. And like it's, you know, when you get to the final chapter page, you find out what happened to the dove. And I was like, you know, that's sort of the metaphor of the book. It's about these people struggling and like whether they'll goes. And so I tried to make the book, you know, sort of seamless like that, in that it's a unit, but these are also 10 stories that sort of exist in silos. There are exactly 0 references from one story to the next in the book, and that's on purpose. I do imagine them all sort of as being in the same universe, but I really wanted them to be able to stand on their own and not like just because, like, I think when you have varied topics like drug abuse and mental illness and what it's like to have a handicapped child or not have custody of your children, like, these stories are going to speak to different people in different ways. Like, I do a lot of hand selling at conventions with my publisher, and now I'm starting to hit shows for the second year, and I'm having people come back up to me and say, you know, this story spoke to me and that story spoke to me and this other story was really good, but it didn't resonate with me. And then like five other people will come and say five other variations of which stories they liked and, you know, which one spoke to them. And I think that that was the right call, just because, like I said, I wanted it to be something that could stand on its own and be there for that person and not have any strings attached. You know what I mean? Like, imagine going into Avengers Endgame this week, not having seen any of the Avengers movies. Like, it's probably going to be able to stand on its own, but you definitely need to know who the characters are, and there's going to be some references to backstory that maybe you'll need to know. And it'll be a harder experience, and I didn't want to do that with, you know, 10 short stories.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about Dead End Kids. This is your newest project, which is slated to be a miniseries, correct?
Yeah, it's a three-issue miniseries. I wanted to keep it short and affordable for myself, but also wanted to keep it sort of short and affordable for the reader. I think just from the, I guess, sales perspective, most miniseries start losing money after three or four issues, and because people drop off, or because, you know, it's just you end up spending so much creating the book that, yeah, diminishing returns sort of defeats your bank account in the long run. But the other thing is, I just, like I said, I wanted to make it something that somebody could sit with, read in a sitting, enjoy or hate, but put it down, and it not have cost them an arm and a leg. Like, three issues is obviously half the price of six issues. But yeah, it's a miniseries. It'll be out in, first issue will be out in July, and then August and September. It is the story of three kids in 1999 trying to solve their friend's murder. So it's, I've sort of been pitching it as the Hardy Boys meet Stand By Me, but with if there were a hardcore version of that, a little more realistic, there's more violence. What I hate about movies like that is, like, or the Hardy Boys books in particular, is like everyone just sort of gets off scot-free, right? It's like an episode of Scooby-Doo. It all resets by the end. But if these kinds of things happened to, like, 13 or 14 year olds, there would be serious, at the very least, mental consequences, if not physical trauma, that they would walk away with. And it would be a much higher stakes situation than the Hardy Boys books ever made it out to be. So I wanted to do that. And I wanted to set in the 90s because I was feeling kind of nostalgic when I started writing it about this time last year.
It's interesting. Like, so I've had the opportunity to read the first issue, and it, you know, I literally read Grief this morning and then the first issue of Dead End Kids, like, immediately afterwards. And it, you know, while it's not a continuation of Grief, it feels like it's very similar in tone and, like, style. Is that, you know, a comfort zone for you to kind of work with, you know, realistic but slightly fantastical situations and, like, deal with, like, really heavier issues than a lot of just kind of cookie cutter comic books would deal with?
Sure. Well, like I said, I wanted to tell character stories. Like, I feel like I, again, have sort of ingrained that into my writing DNA. Like, it's something I do. Like, I don't conceive an idea. I conceive, like, something I want a character to go through, and then I wrap the idea around that. So, like, when I was growing up, I had been adopted by my friend's family when I was about this age. I think I was 13 at the time. It was 2000, so I was probably about 13. I remember, like, that whole situation, you know, just sort of 13, you know, being, like, really confusing and, like, frustrating and, like, not having sort of the emotional capacity as a 13-year-old to really understand what was frustrating me about it or what I could do about it and stuff like that. And I just remember being angry a lot. And, like, I think a lot of 13-year-olds are angry for a lot of different reasons. But, like, that was sort of what I wanted to explore in this book. I wanted to sort of explore, like, trauma and, like, how it can – things that happen to you when you're a kid can really set the tone for the rest of your life. You didn't get to read the second issue, and I won't spoil it for anyone. But, like, we really deep dive into, like – what these characters' past traumas are and how they got to be the way they are. And then sort of look at some of the adults in the book and, like, what got them to be the way they are. And the story itself was always going to be about Murphy, the main character, like, making a decision about who he wants, whether he wants to let, like, his anger and trauma sort of define who he is, or whether he's going to you know, be able to let that go, or if there's some middle ground, or if there's something darker, like, yeah, not, I don't, again, I don't want to ruin the end of the book. It's not a clean ending. Like, not everybody gets out unscathed. But when I was doing that, I was sort of like, well, what's a cool story to wrap that in? And I was like, no, a murder mystery. Like, you know, like I Stand By Me is one of my favorite movies. The Sandlot is definitely up there for me as a movie I love. Even stuff like The Breakfast Club. And like, I love all these sort of coming of age stories and these sort of nostalgia driven stories, especially Stand By Me. You know, that was done in the '80s and I looked back at the '50s. As I started thinking about nostalgia, I was like, man, childhood was super great. And I remember going outside and playing and building forts and just all that stuff. But then like, the more I thought about it, the more I remembered like that it wasn't all that great. Like, the reason I was outside with my friends playing in forests was because like, my home life was garbage. Like, not because it was anyone's fault, but that's the reality of it. And then I started thinking about my, like, my friends' home lives, and they were like, they weren't great either. And like, so like, you know, nostalgia is this kind of romanticizing of the past. And I sort of wanted to take that sort of head on and like treat it very honestly. Are you guys familiar with the book Ender's Game?
So I read it in middle school. Like, I loved it in middle school, but I'm not like, it's one of those things that if I dig back, I can remember that I read it, but not very much about it.
All right. So there's a sequel to the book called Speaker for the Dead, and it follows Ender many years later after the first book. And it's like a very different book. Like, it's more philosophical and less sci-fi. And without like getting too much into the plot, essentially Ender feels a lot of regret and remorse for what he did at the end of Ender's Game. And he's sort of living a life to sort of make up for what he did at the end of Ender's Game. And so he's going around the universe delivering eulogies for people who have died. And any kind of person, you can call on him. He's the speaker for the dead. You send out a message and he'll come deliver a eulogy. And it's sort of like a weird detective kind of thing. He'll come when a person's died and he'll sort of talk to people and gather information, and then he'll deliver this eulogy. But it's like, what he does is he does it sort of warts and all. Like, he'll say the good that someone's done, but also the bad, and say it very frankly and like very evenly. And he does this very honest take on a person. And like, when I read that sort of resonated with me, and that's sort of like become another part of my storytelling. Like, I want to look at these things like childhood and nostalgia, things that we sort of build up and romanticize, but I want to look at them honestly. Yeah, like, childhood was a lot of fun and like a lot of good stuff happened, but like, that doesn't mean the bad stuff didn't happen or that it didn't matter. So that's sort of a long way of saying like, that's one of the ways I came to this sort of idea for the book.
You know, it's interesting. I had that sense like as I was reading this first issue, because there's this moment where the light in the neighborhood comes on, like the street light in the neighborhood comes on, and the one kid says, well, that's my cue to go home. And I remember I would stay out until the lights in the neighborhood came on, and then I would push it even further because I just didn't want to go home. You know, like I knew that I could get away with staying out for like another 10 or 15 minutes before my mom was going crazy about it. So I felt that like sense of, oh, I remember that was so much fun, but also, oh man, I remember why I would stay out. You know, probably not quite as exaggerated as, you know, the experience that you had, but definitely there was some, I don't want to be at home going on in my brain too. I don't know. It's cool. It's really good stuff. And I like that the what you're writing is from a personal place while also being like entertaining and interesting. And the artists that you've, you know, surrounded yourself with are also doing a bang up job of helping tell your story. So congrats on that.
Thanks.
Really quick before I let you go, tell me a little bit about Source Point Press, kind of what you guys are doing with that, and then how people can find you online and find your books so that they get the opportunity to read these, I mean, really awesome stories.
So Source Point Press is, we call ourselves a small publisher, but I think that we've really sort of become a little bit more than a small publisher now. We're a publisher. We're out of sort of Midland, Detroit area, Michigan. And the company's been around since, I'm going to get this wrong, but I think it was 2012. Might be 2014, but it's, you know, five, six, 7 years, a little while. And it's a company that does primarily horror and sci-fi books. It's a very grassroots driven approach to comic publishing. We do, I want to say, 60 or 70 conventions a year. There's some weekends where we're in three states at three different shows, like with three different teams. And it's creator owned books, like sort of like an Image. But it's, the creators have an even bigger stake in it. Like it's us at the table selling the books. So it's weirdly communistic in a very beneficial way for everyone. But the company was started by a guy named Josh Werner, who is our art director, and it is the day-to-day operations are run by Travis McIntyre, who was involved with Caliber Comics back in the day, worked under Gary Reed, and that's sort of how he got into comics. So these two together sort of were the perfect storm for this company, the right brains and push behind, you know, a love for comics, and giving people who maybe won't get a voice in comics or can't get the doors open a little bit of a platform. So they were around, and I mentioned Comics Experience earlier in the podcast. So Comics Experience has a publishing program where they sort of pipeline talent to SourcePoint. We have open submissions two or three times a year, and we do waves of co-published SourcePoint Press Comics Experience books. And that's how Grief got published. And that came out last year. And I was able to get very involved with the publisher very quickly, work a lot of shows with them, and just get to know them and become part of the family. And then when I had this other book, I pitched it to them, and you know, it worked out. So that was a couple months ago. We talked about that, and the solicit will drop in previews on Wednesday, April 24th, which is this upcoming Wednesday as of when we're recording this. And the book will drop on July 24th. So a little bit after San Diego Comic-Con. And I hope people will check it out. I hope they'll like it. I know in my heart it's not going to be a book for everyone, and that's not the book I'm kind of trying to write. But for the people who do pick it up and who do love it, like, those are the people I'm writing it for, and I'm hoping they'll check it out and love it.
Yeah, if you're like a fan of the kind of, you know, introspective, like Fantagraphics sort of style of writing where there's a little more meat on the bones to the comic book, you know, you're less interested in what superhero could kick some other superhero's ass, and you're more interested in like what this story actually has to tell. This is definitely the kind of book that you would enjoy. I'm glad that this stumbled into my lap through the interview process, like however that all got hooked up, because I actually really, really enjoyed Grief a lot, and I'm really interested to see what you do with Dead End Kids.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that's the dream, right? Getting it in people's hands and having them like it.
Exactly. And how can people find you online so they can keep track of everything?
Sure. I'm super accessible online. All my Instagram, Twitter handles are just my name, at Frank Gogol, FrankGogol. I'm on Facebook. I have a website, frankgogol.com, that if you feel like you want to email me, I guess you can email me. There's a contact form on there. Like I said, I'm pretty accessible. I like engaging with people. I'm not the kind of person who will follow a bunch of people on Instagram and then unfollow them because I'm vain. They can reach me at Frank Gogol.
Awesome. Well, Frank, I don't know why that came out of my mouth like that. Well, Frank, thank you so much for your time this morning. I really enjoyed talking with you, man. And, hopefully some people come to conventions, meet you and pick up this book. Cause it's really enjoyable. It's a really good couple of books, you know, Grief and Dead End Kids, both I really enjoyed. So thanks, man.
Thank you. Thanks. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Oh man, how exciting is it to pop someone's cherry? Frank let me know at the end of that interview that this is his first time going out and talking about the book in a podcast kind of interview setting. I hope he has a ton of success. Like I said in the interview, if you're a fan of like kind of that deeper, more introspective like style of comic books where maybe it's a little more slice of life, but also has like, you know, different things going on, space aliens, you know, meta powers, that sort of thing. It's a really cool take on a book, at least Grief is, and then Dead End Kids started out exactly like the kind of book I like to read. So be sure to go check him out. Check out Source Point Press. I'm sure you guys can find him at conventions. This is, yeah, it was great talking to Frank. I hope you guys enjoyed this interview. Of course, you will be able to find out more about our podcast at www.totlb.com or facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox, on Twitter, Instagram, @outsidelongbox, or you can shoot us an email if you have a project that you're working on and you would like to talk with us on the show about, outsidethelongbox@gmail.com. And finally, you can leave us a voicemail message if you just have to get all those angry comments off your chest on the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline, 970-573-6148. Thanks to all our Patreon supporters. And yeah, hope you enjoyed this special interview episode with Frank Gogol, writer of Grief and Dead End Kids. Keep an eye out for it. You guys are going to enjoy it. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Baron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Baron Space production.